This week there's really only been one news story, hasn't there? And it's been the climate change protests in London. I'm sure a number of you were inconvenienced by them during the week. Let's have the first slide there, Matthew, please. Let's go. There we are. David Attenborough was on TV during the week. I'm sure some of you watched that. Millions did. Emma Thompson was speaking from the pink boat. They are agreed that the greatest issue, the greatest problem facing humanity is that of climate change. Would you agree? Some, of course, say there is no problem at all. It's just another stage. Like the Ice Age we're going through, all will be well, the planet will right itself. Others say, no, it is a major problem, but we can deal with it ourselves. We can fix it. Others say, it's far too big and complex. I'll just get on and live my life without paying any further attention to it. Well, the Bible's quite clear that humanity's biggest problem is not climate change, not the end of the world. Humanity's biggest problem is with God. We have rebelled against him, and rebellious humanity faces his judgment. And we need someone to deal with that judgment for us. Now, of course, there are those who say there's no issue at all. There is no God, there is no judgment, there's nothing to be worried about. Others say, yes, but we can save ourselves. Just to leave it to us. We'll sort it out. We'll find a way. Others say, this is all too much. Let's just eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Well, Easter says, look at God's solution. Look at Jesus. See who he was, and look at what he did. Because sometimes we only really grasp the scale of the problem by its resolution or by the person who has to take responsibility. Imagine at work you've got two problems. The problem on the right is that the company charged with the cleaning just aren't up to it. The waste bins are full to overflowing. The other problem is that your share price is going through the floor. Who's going to deal with which problem? Which problem is the more serious for the long-term well-being of the company? The one will be dealt with at board level, the other could be dealt with by the janitors. It's obvious which problem is more serious because of the team that's put on it to sort it out. So let's have a closer look at Jesus. And if we do that, we'll have a better grasp on the size of the problem facing us, because a big problem demands a big solution. First of all then, first heading, if you've got a sheet, hopefully you can see that. Jesus, Messiah and Son of God. Mark has fulfilled the purpose for which he wrote his gospel. If we look back to the very beginning of the gospel, verse 1 of chapter 1, he says, the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And so we're looking, Mark is presenting us with Jesus as God's King, his Messiah. He's presenting us with Jesus as God's true Son, in contrast to Israel and many of the kings. Now, as we know, he answers the who is Jesus question in verse 29 of chapter 8, when Peter says, you are the Christ. That's Peter's confession of faith, probably the disciples as well. Yes, the one standing in Palestine on that day is indeed God's long-promised king, the one spoken of in history, spoken of in the prophets in the Old Testament. Here he is amongst us. And then we fast forward to chapter 15, where we were last week. And the centurion looking at the crucified Jesus, says, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." Having seen so many die, he sees this one die and draws this amazing conclusion. So Mark, by the end of chapter 15, has wrapped up his gospel. He said he was going to set out to show us Jesus, the Messiah, and Jesus, Son of God, and that's exactly what he has done. And for so long, God's people had been looking for this coming one, looking for the promised descendant of David who would sit on the throne, looking for the Messiah who would bring all of God's promises into reality for God's people. And Mark is saying to us, here he is, it's this Jesus. He's revealed as true Son of God, revealed as the Messiah. Now, I'm sure I'm not the only one in the room who is a big fan of Line of Duty. I'm sure you're hoping I'm not going on too long tonight so you can get home in good time and settle and be ready. But of course, for those of us who are watching, we are desperate to find out who H is, aren't we? We're trying to work it all out. I'm sure you've got your own theories. And I don't know about you, but I'm just beginning to wonder if we're not going to find out in this series at all. And it'll be another one or maybe two series before we get the identity. Because there seem to be an interminable number of characters who have an H in their name. I'm sure you've noticed that as well. We're waiting and wondering. But for Mark, there's no more waiting and wondering. He's pointing the finger at Jesus, the Christ, the Son of God. Now, I don't know where you are with Jesus at the moment. I don't know what your conclusions are about him. Maybe you'd like to look into his identity in a bit more detail. Well, we've got some courses starting next week, Christianity Explored, looking more closely at Mark's Gospel. And they've been a great help. That course has been a great help to many just to get clearer on who Jesus is. So have a look in Church Family News. See when those groups are starting. You'd be most welcome. But the course doesn't just look at who Jesus is. The course also looks at what he came to do. So let's move on to consider that now as well. Secondly then, Jesus dead and buried. Jesus dead and buried. Verse 37 of chapter 15. And Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last. Jesus has fulfilled his mission. Back in chapter 3, the Pharisees and the Herodians plotted together in order to destroy Jesus. In chapter 10, he tells us he came to give his life as a ransom for many. And three times in the gospel, he predicts his death in Jerusalem. And here in chapter 15, verse 37, we see that mission accomplished. The darkness of verse 33 is the darkness of God's judgment coming over the land, coming on Jesus. Verse 34, he cries out that he is forsaken by God. He experiences hell in our place. And we see the benefits of that. If we look down to verse 38, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. That great big no entry sign that stood in front of the Holy of Holies, preventing anyone apart from the high priest once a year coming into God's presence with the blood of sacrifice, that curtain is torn down. The picture's obvious, isn't it? The opportunity now is for all who trust in Jesus to come in. There's a welcome for all because there is a way through the curtain. Just one way through one man, but Jesus has made it. It's a Friday evening. Sabbath will start at dusk. There is little light left. There is little time left. And so, in order not to trample on Jewish sensitivities overly much, bodies must be taken down from the cross in order that the Sabbath isn't defiled. Take the picture away now, Matthew, for me. Thank you. So that's what Joseph Arimathea decides needs to happen. Verse 33, Joseph Arimathea, a respected member of the council who was also himself looking for the kingdom of God, took courage and went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Now, of course, Pilate took some delight in trampling on Jewish religious sensitivities. So Joseph has no idea what reception he's going to get. So it did indeed take courage, but he knows he must ask. Pilate's reaction, verse 44. Pilate was surprised to hear that he should have already died. Even the breaking of the criminal's legs, which they did to stop the liquid being expelled from the lungs, even that shouldn't have resulted in such a sudden death. Pilate is surprised. And so he checks with the man in charge. Our friend the centurion comes back into the story. And summoning the centurion, he asked him whether he was already dead. And when he learned from the centurion that he was dead, he granted the corpse to Joseph. Again, this man knows death. He understands the process of crucifixion, the stages the crucified goes through. He's seen it before. He knows this one is indeed dead. And then you will know, if you've had conversations with people about the resurrection, one of the reasons people come up with as to why Jesus didn't rise from the dead was that he was never dead at all. He wasn't dead in the first place. He just swooned, so they say. Well, here we have clear evidence. Here we have an investigation as to whether or not Jesus had died. And Mark makes the point, which the ESV brings out very well. I wonder if you noticed that. Have a look at verse 43. Joseph asked for the body of Jesus. Verse 45, when Pilate learned from the centurion that Jesus was dead, he granted the corpse to Joseph. And the ESV is reflecting two different words in the original. One that means a body, usually a living body. Another that means a body, most usually a corpse. So Mark is very clear. Jesus has fulfilled his mission. He is dead. He is now nothing more than a corpse, and the corpse is therefore fit for burial. Jesus was born to give his life as a ransom for many. To do that, he had to die. He was the perfect sacrifice whose shed blood paid for the sins of the world. The one who bore the wrath reserved for each and every one of us. But maybe that's something you haven't quite got hold of yet. Well, ponder it. Give thought to it. Look again at who Jesus was. Look again at why he came. Look at what he did. And Christian Explored may be the best venue for that. But if you are there, then yes, let's ponder it. But let's rejoice together in it. Let's rejoice that our King, King Jesus, lays down his life for his people. And let's think what that must mean in terms of the one to whom my life is now due. What change is that going to mean for the way in which I choose to live? Jesus, the King, is dead and buried. Thirdly, then, Jesus alive as promised. Jesus has fulfilled the promise he made to his disciples. Given that Mark has shown Jesus to be Christ and Son of God, the one who paid the ransom by his death, all of that clear by the end of chapter 15, why do we need chapter 16? Well, the simple answer is that Jesus has said not just that he would die, but he has said three times he would rise again. If he's lied about that, and he's deceived us about that, then he cannot be the Christ, the Son of God. The sins of the world then have not been paid for. We need to know that he had no sins of his own to die for. We need to know that he could indeed bear your sins and mine. And so he must rise from the dead. You'll have noticed, I'm sure, how it is the women who provide the link. If you look back to verse 40, they are there watching at a distance at the crucifixion. You'll notice that three are named, Mary, and Salome. There were also many others who came up with him to Jerusalem. Many of those who were there on what we call Palm Sunday are still there. They have stayed around, staying with relatives, and they have followed this close to the end. Glance across to verse 47. Mary and Mary are there watching Jesus laid in Joseph's tomb. And it is those two, along with Salome, who go to that place in verse 1 of chapter 16. Interesting that two of them, the two Marys, are mentioned in all three of those verses. Because in Jewish law, two witnesses were needed in court. And although the testimony of women didn't count, here Mark is presenting us with these two witnesses who see Jesus from his cross to his place of burial. And as you will have heard, you'll have heard people say, I'm sure, but they went to the wrong tomb. It was sort of dusky, it was dark, it was very early in the morning, they were very emotional, too many tears, they just couldn't see what they were doing or where they were going. But Jewish folk took the treatment of the dead very seriously. As you did well by somebody in life, so you did well by them in their death. This is not a mistake that would have been made. And Mark makes it very clear that they are watching and taking note and going to the right place, not the wrong place. And it's also quite clear why they're going, isn't it? Verse 1 of 16, they brought spices that they might go and anoint him. Clearly, whatever was done to the body the previous evening hasn't been sufficient. The job must be finished. Jesus must be as well looked after in death as they looked after him in his life. And then on the way, they realize they've got a problem. Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb? But that question turns into alarm, verse 4. They looked up, they saw the stone had been rolled back, it was very large, and entering the tomb they saw a young man sitting on the right side dressed in a white robe, and they were alarmed. The word used in 5 and again in 6 means amazed or distressed. And why wouldn't they be? They've probably, with their families, been to many such tombs, and maybe to a number of such anointings. This isn't how it was meant to turn out. They're distressed. The body is gone. But the angel reassures them. He says, no, they're doing the right thing. You seek Jesus, who was crucified. Yes, tick those boxes. See the place where they laid him. Yes, this is the right place. But he also says, he has risen. He is not here. He reassures them, in a sense, that all is well. He reassures them that all is better than well. But then in verse 7, he says this, go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you. Given that Jesus had three times already told them that he was going to rise from the dead, it is amazing that that gets forgotten on the way through, isn't it? And it would appear that he hasn't just told them he's going to rise again three times, he's told them he will meet them in Galilee as well. They need reminding of the word that he has spoken. They need the comfort and assurance of that word at this particular moment. But then verse 8 is a bit of a shock and a surprise, and I guess a bit of a disappointment, isn't it? And they went out. And we might want to say, and they went out and found Peter and John, the rest of the disciples. They told them and rejoiced together. That's what we might want it to say, but Mark doesn't say that, does he? They went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. We might think that's a somewhat disappointing, anticlimactic end to the gospel. But throughout Mark, whenever Jesus does an outstanding, big miracle, like the calming of the storm, like the driving of the demons out of Legion, this is the response every single time. Fear. Jesus spoke of the stronger man being able to triumph over the strong man. Jesus is not just stronger man, he is strongest man. He can triumph over all human opposition, even death itself. This is the greatest miracle of all. So this response is perfectly appropriate. And it's probably one that we should take on board a bit more, recognizing the power and authority that this Jesus has, recognizing the need we have to bow the knee to him, recognizing the need we have to fear him. But of course, it may be that you're still struggling with the very idea of resurrection. Maybe you've got a medical background. You just don't see how on earth it could work, given what you know about the human body and how it decays and all those sorts of things. But again, read again. Look further. See if you can come up with an alternative solution. But for those of us who have got to that point of saying yes to the risen Jesus, let's make sure that we are those who fear him. Let's make sure that we will be those who continue to speak for him and of his resurrection when the opportunity presents itself. Who knows what opportunities may come later this week amongst work and friends. The old question, what do you do at the weekend? Now, of course, the world is keen not to acknowledge Easter, isn't it? I was very struck listening to the Breakfast Radio program on Friday, how one of the presenters would only talk about a bank holiday. Didn't mention the fact that it was Good Friday at all. And Easter somehow has slipped off the radar of so many people, hasn't it? Well, maybe that's a topic for conversation later this week. An opportunity to speak of the good news of the resurrection, the defeat of death and darkness, the availability of forgiveness and new life, and an all-powerful Lord whom we may serve. Humanity's greatest problem is that we're out of relationship with our Heavenly Father. And that unless his wrath is turned away from us, then that solution can never be found. But Jesus has the answer to humanity's greatest problem. Mark's gospel tells us who he is, both Christ and Son of God. Mark tells us the work that he has done to give his life as a ransom for many. And today we rejoice in the resurrection, because resurrection tells us that he has indeed accomplished that work, and there is hope of eternity for all who will put their trust in him.